I think the expectation was that I was going to agree with them and pray it away, and they never thought that I would be like, okay.
You can make it no matter where you come from. Nobody needs to tell you you're a winner or a loser. You just need to feel the winner inside.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Coahuila becomes the first Mexican state to legislate marriage equality. The viral video of a family feud fuels support for a Georgia gay teen. And fear nothing, because we can't hide Beverly McClellan. All that and more this week, because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Natalie Peoples.
And I'm Jason Proctor.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBT communities around the world for the week ending September 6, 2014. Lawmakers in Coahuila have made it the first state in Mexico to legislatively open civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples. The September 1st vote by Coahuila's Congress was 19-1. The new law revises more than 40 sections of the state's civil code and takes effect in the coming week. According to reports, it defines marriage as the free union with full consent of two people, which has as its objective to realize community life where both people seek respect, equality, and mutual aid. The law's exposition of motives says it puts an end to the restrictions and limitations imposed on the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transsexual, travesti, transgender, and intersex community, which constitutes a constitutional and international violation. Civil marriage for same-gender couples is available in two other places in Mexico: the Federal District, Mexico City, where it was passed by legislators in 2009, and in the state of Quintana Roo, where the Secretary of State determined in 2012 that the state's civil code did not specify sex or gender requirements for marriage. Mexico has 31 states. Coahuila borders the southern boundary of the U.S. state of Texas.
It didn't take long for the 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals to issue its ruling on the constitutionality of civil marriage bans in the states of Indiana and Wisconsin. The three-judge panel heard oral arguments in Chicago on August 26th. Led by Ronald Reagan appointee Richard Posner, the judges challenged every argument in separate hearings by each of the attorneys representing the two states in defense of their respective bans. While the unanimous ruling by the appeals court striking down the bans wasn't in doubt, the speed with which it was issued was noteworthy. Posner, who wrote the decision, called the cases straightforward to decide. He scorned the arguments by each of the state's lawyers that keeping marriage exclusive to heterosexual couples encourages responsible procreation as so full of holes that it cannot be taken seriously. To the extent that children are better off in families in which the parents are married, they are better off whether they are raised by their biological parents or by adoptive parents. The discrimination against same-sex couples is irrational and therefore unconstitutional. Officials in Indiana and Wisconsin can let the ruling stand, but that's unlikely for the Republican-controlled administrations of each state. They can ask for a full Seventh Circuit Court review or appeal directly to the U.S. Supreme Court, which already has other state appeals pending.
The Seventh Circuit decision is the fourth from a federal appeals court to overturn state civil marriage bans, and the 39th ruling from a state or federal court in favor of marriage equality since the U.S. Supreme Court's landmark Windsor decision last year. Since that time, just two judges have upheld state bans on civil marriage for gay and lesbian couples: a state judge in Tennessee, and this week a federal judge in Louisiana. District Judge Martin Feldman upheld Louisiana's ban in a September 3rd ruling, referring to the issue of marriage equality as lifestyle choices recognition. He said that states have the right to define civil marriage and that opponents of the ban had failed to prove that it violates the U.S. Constitution. Attorneys for the same-gender couples who brought the case said they'll appeal.
In legal news elsewhere, a Jamaican activist has withdrawn his lawsuit challenging the Caribbean nation's so-called buggery laws out of fear for his safety and the safety of his family. 25-year-old Javed Jagay said he's received death threats since bringing his case before the Supreme Court. Dating back to 1864 and a relic of British rule, the anti-gay law punishes private, consensual adult male homosexual acts with 10 years at hard labor for the abominable crime of buggery. Though the cause and the case are noble, Jagay wrote in his formal withdrawal, I am no longer willing to gamble with my life or the lives of my parents and siblings. The now moot court case was based on Jagay's claim that he was unlawfully evicted from his residence for being gay, and would have argued that the buggery law itself violates Jamaica's constitutionally protected privacy laws. Prime Minister Portia Simpson Miller had previously promised to review the anti-gay law, but has failed to do so. There's strong societal homophobia on the island, marked by routine violence against people perceived to be sexual or gender variant, and death threats or worse against activists. A recent anti-gay rally in Kingston drew several thousand people, and dozens of homeless LGBT young people have nowhere else to live other than Jamaica's sewers.
Uganda's constitutional court struck down that nation's infamous anti-homosexuality law on a legal technicality in August. But as equality advocates feared, an effort is being made to pass that law again, or something similar, this time with a constitutionally mandated quorum present and voting. The court cited the lack of a quorum as the only reason it overturned the measure. MP David Bahati, who has close ties with right-wing Christian groups in the United States, wrote the original bill. He officially informed the Ugandan deputy speaker this week that he intends to reintroduce it in the new parliamentary session. There have been reports that a revised version of the bill would focus on criminalizing the promotion of homosexuality. One MP told reporters that if adults have consented, period, there's no problem, we shall not harass them. But there's tremendous homophobia in the East African country, stirred to the boiling point by the numerous visits of several U.S. evangelicals peddling so-called pray the gay away cures. So even if the new law doesn't enhance penalties for private consensual adult gay sex, already a crime there, hostility towards sexual minorities in Uganda remains pervasive.
Organizers of the New York City St. Patrick's Day Parade announced this week that an LGBT-identified organization will be allowed to participate next March for the first time in the event's 253-year history. Unlike St. Patrick's Day celebrations in other parts of the world, including Ireland, self-identified LGBT groups have been banned from what Roman Catholic Church-affiliated organizers call the oldest and largest such parade. Out at NBC Universal, the multimedia empire's LGBT employee group will be allowed to march under its own banner. As it happens, NBC broadcasts the festivities. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio boycotted the event last year because of the LGBT ban, and Guinness, Sam Adams, and Heineken dropped out as sponsors. But Irish Queers, which has fought the ban for decades, noted that allowing just one group to march, and a group associated with one of the parade's major sponsors at that, was not a lifting of the ban. The group's media statement scoffed at the claim that other groups can apply in years to come. We remember too well, it said, how parade organizers used fake waiting lists to bury our applications before. New York's major LGBT advocacy group, Empire State Pride Agenda, called the organizers' announcement disappointing and self-serving. Inviting one group to march at the exclusion of all others is a far stretch from the full inclusion we deserve.
Gay sporting news was made on three continents this week. Former University of Missouri standout and rookie defensive end Michael Sam, the U.S. National Football League's first out player to be drafted by a professional team, was cut from the squad at the end of August by the St. Louis Rams. The 24-year-old player had performed well in preseason games, but was released by the Rams in the final round of cuts, reportedly because the team overflows with other defensive talent. But Sam was signed this week by the Dallas Cowboys to the team's 10-man practice squad, which could be a gateway to his eventual debut during a regular season game. Cowboys coach Jason Garrett said they'd had nothing but good reports about him from our people and people in St. Louis. We just want to give him a chance to come in and see if he can help our football team. Sam grew up in Texas and said it was great to be heading home.
The chief executive officer of the Australian Football League has put his professional footy organization's support for marriage equality on the record in response to a letter he received from the mother of a gay son. Gillan McLaughlin wrote back that, "Our game does not tolerate discrimination in any form, be that sexual identity, gender, race, religious views, etc., and redress for any player, coach, or official is clearly written into our rules. We also support the position of marriage equality for all people," he added. Australia's largest sporting organizations recently joined together to make a commitment to wipe out homophobia in sport. But this appears to be the first time that a major sporting code has so explicitly and publicly backed the opening of civil marriage to same-gender couples.
And finally, if you notice rainbow shoelaces being sported by your favorite British football player, soccer in the U.S., then the goals of the country's leading LGBT rights group, Stonewall, have been met. Joined by Britain's Gay Football Supporters Network and controversial bookmaker Paddy Power, they've sent rainbow laces to every premiership footballer and professional club in Britain in support of out players and fans. Several well-known players star in humorous TV and print ads promoting the campaign. Hundreds of players wore the rainbow laces as part of the inaugural effort against homophobia in sport last year. Britain's Women and Equalities Minister, Nikki Morgan, likes the campaign. "I urge clubs and fans to show their support," she said, "by lacing up."
That's News Wrap for the week ending September 6th, 2014. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK, Los Angeles.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Natalie Peoples.
And I'm Jason Proctor.
Extra, extra, read all about it. Extra.
Have you checked our website lately? For now playing information and behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio show, log on to thiswayout.org.
I just wanted to sing, just wanted to do that. And that was some girl in a podunk town of 3,000 people, still to this day with one stoplight.
The multi-talented Beverly McClellan does a lot more than sing later in the program.
Everyone thinks that I'm a freak, the way I dress, the way I speak. I'm too thin, I hate my voice. I'd switch lives if I had the choice. I'll be tall and rich someday. Everything will go my way. Someday, someday.
It happens every day, and in this age of personal media, it was bound to happen on video. When it happened to Daniel Ashley Pierce, a friend of the gay Georgia teen posted his recording of the event to YouTube. Pierce told Atlanta's WXIA-TV how his horrific experience began.
It's my grandmother, my grandfather, my dad, my stepmother, and my dad's sister. Once I saw all of them get out of the car, I knew something was happening. It escalated outside of the house first, verbally. And then, of course, my entire neighborhood was outside, so we went inside, and I thought, well, for myself, for my own protection, if something were to happen, it would be best to have it on video. I guess it was just, I just hit record, and then, you know, it kind of all went from there, and the video really speaks for itself.
Get out!
Get out!
Stop it!
Get off of me! What's wrong with you?
I will not let people believe that I condone what you do.
Okay. Well, I will be out by Thursday night at midnight. How about that?
All right.
I'll be completely out, and you'll never, ever have to see me again.
If that's the way you choose it, that's fine.
No, that's not what I'm choosing. I'm doing what you're telling me to do, and you're disowning me.
You're a disgrace.
I'm not a disgrace.
Yeah, you are.
No, I am not.
Unfortunately, I'm sorry to say that you are.
A lot of people don't realize that that happens. They see all the positive videos, and the negative video never gets seen. So if one family watches it, and maybe changes their mind about the way they're going to handle it with their son or their daughter coming out, it will, one family changes their mind, I would be happy. It is 2014, and sadly, we still live in a world of judgment.
Pierce says he's not seen his family since that dramatic scene, but like many discarded queer youth, he bears them no ill will.
They're still my family. You know, I wish no harm to them. The video was not posted for people to go and attack them. That's something I would never want to happen. I wouldn't want it to happen to me. I wouldn't want it to happen to them. They still are my family, and I love them with all my heart. But, you know, what they said and did was very hurtful. I think the expectation was that I was going to agree with them and pray it away, and they never thought that I would be like, okay, you know. I came out in last October to my stepmother first. She was very, very supportive. That I have text messages to, you know, back me up. She was very, very supportive. And, you know, what she did is what hurt me the most. I mean, the things that I was called was just, I can't even repeat them.
The betrayal by his family was devastating, but the posted video led to more support than Pierce could have imagined.
It's amazing to me how, when you watch the video and you hear what my blood relatives said, and then you go look at the millions of comments, well, probably collectively together, at least 500,000 comments and messages. I mean, I know on my Facebook alone, I got so behind on the messages, it was like at 999 plus. Definitely not alone in this. And so it's crazy with all the support.
There were more than words of support from people online. Over $90,000 has been donated to Daniel Pierce, so much that he's redirecting part of the contributions to Lost and Found Youth, an Atlanta-based nonprofit organization that serves homeless LGBT young people. The group hopes to open a shelter in 2015. They're online at lostandfoundyouth.org.
Hello, I'm Armistead Maupin, author of Tales of the City, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio news magazine produced by, about, and for our sexually diverse communities and those who love them.
Who knew? Sitting in Gate City, Virginia, population maybe 3,000, that I'd end up something like this. I always knew I was different. I just didn't care.
That was Beverly McClellan in her starring role at the 2012 GLAAD Awards celebration in San Francisco. McClellan talked with correspondent Dixie Trichel about the unique style that scored her big points on The Voice and all the things other than voice she brings to the stage. As she sings on a cut from her most recent CD, I Can't Hide Me.
Yeah.
What a voice, and tell us about yourself.
I'm a hillbilly that likes to sing, and I got a chance to do that on a national television show, and I'm continuing on the legacy that Etta James inspired me to do, you know, along with Janis Joplin and other people, and Dolly Parton even. I like music. I like to sing. I like to make it. Blues is where my heart is. Blues and rock. Blues rock, I'd say.
Do you have a preference for playing acoustic as opposed to electric?
That's where it started for me. I mean, I didn't have an electric at first. I had an acoustic. So I just stayed acoustic. Me and my guitar, we're all right. We have a relationship, but me and that piano got one too. You know, it's different with every instrument, but I'd say that the two that I love the most, obviously, is piano and guitar.
I can't hide
me. I can't
you.
Hide me, and
yeah.
I don't want to
all right.
anyway.
Yeah. And that's from Fear Nothing. Now, that's mm-hmm. your most recent CD.
Anything that you're listening to on that CD, I've lived, because I write stuff that directly links to my life.
How do you go about writing your songs?
For me, it's all emotion. It's got to be something that I feel compelled to write about. And, you know, love is definitely one of those things. And being a powerful woman, you know, like the women I grew up around, like, you know, Pat Benatar, Hart, Joan mm-hmm. Jett, Cyndi Lauper. Like in the 80s when I grew up, when they actually played music on, you know, MTV. That was the day when I grew up, when music was actually being played on there. And, mm-hmm. you know, I just wanted to be that since I was 5 years old. That's mm-hmm. all I know. I just wanted to sing, just wanted to do that. And that was some girl in a podunk town of 3,000 people. Still to this day with one stoplight. You can make it no matter where you come from. Nobody needs to tell you you're a winner or a loser. You just need to feel the winner inside. And I was born in Kingsport, Tennessee, because Gate City, Virginia ain't got no hospital. How about that? We had a party line, if you know what I'm talking about. The phone
yeah.
up on the mountain where, you know, hey, oh, sorry you're on the phone. Cool. We'll be off in 10 minutes. Yeah, we had five people sharing the same phone line. Yeah, that's country.
That is indeed.
That's where I'm from, so I'm bringing the blues out of that.
When you started singing, did you start out as a blues singer, or were you just singing songs
no,
that you heard on
I
the
started
radio?
Out singing Dolly Parton songs, Johnny Cash, and a ton of gospel, because my mom was a piano player at church. Dad was a pastor, so I grew up in church, you know, singing,
yeah.
singing, singing.
You were singing, what, in Florida for years and years, and then you got this break to
yeah,
go
somebody,
on The Voice.
One a feller in my band that I work with every once in a while asked me to give this email that he sent me a look at. There was a new singing show coming out, and I was like, yeah, I ain't going to do that. It's going to be another American Idol, blah, 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 you know?
mm-hmm.
You know, I just didn't want to be made fun of, but The Voice is really a platform for artists like myself and many others. There's no judgment there. If anything, they help you become what it is you want to be. And I'm talking about for, like, mostly, like, the 16-year-olds, the 17-year-olds, the 20-year-olds that go there. I was already 41. I was set in my ways, and I'm already who I'm going to be. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They just kind of showed me to the world and said, go do your thing, girl. Mm-hmm. You know?
That opened up a new pathway to you in a way with where you got to work with Cyndi Lauper and Johnny
oh,
Lane.
Oh, B.B. King.
B.B.
Come
King.
On now.
Hello.
Robert Cray.
Yeah.
Kenny Wayne Shepherd, Johnny Lane, Steve Vai, World Tour. Come
yeah.
on.
How do you feel about that? All of a sudden, you're in a totally different land.
I just kind of go day by day with it. You know, I don't know about that whole fame thing. I don't know, you know, what that is, really. I mean, I'm going to yeah. be Beverly no matter who people say I am. Being able to walk through the other door rather than being a musician that works five nights a week in my town and then getting on a plane now to go to work. Mm-hmm. This is very different for me, but also it's something that now I just know I'm supposed to be here. Mm-hmm. Share music, that's a beautiful thing. Yeah. And my opinion, as far as, you know, living out and proud, that's another thing that people find hard to believe. And I'm like, I've never been any other way except for just me.
And that's a great thing. It sounds like, you know, you haven't, up to this point, had any problems with any discrimination
no.
or anything like that.
Not one.
We love
Not
hearing
one.
That.
America voted me in all three times, so they spoke loud and clear when they, you know, made their opinion of me. Wow, like, just internationally loved. It was really weird and good all at the same time, you know?
And you did perform at the GLAAD Media Awards. How was that?
That was amazing. That was, come on, to be amongst a huge room of family like that and to hear the stories and, you know, how people have come through their hardships. It was overwhelming. It was great, though.
Talk about your ideas for your next CD.
I think the new album, there's just so many people that have stepped up front, and I don't want to name names yet, but I will say that this next album is going to be right up there with Fear Nothing, if not, tip it right over the top.
Was the voice finalist Beverly McClellan with I Can't Hide Me and in conversation with Dixie Trykle. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. This week, Natalie Peoples, Jason Proctor, and Dixie Trykle contributed program material with thanks, as always, to Steve Pride. David Brown and Beverly McClellan performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and our generous listeners for making this program possible. Log on to thiswayout.org for all the latest, including program information, news wrap transcripts, pictures of the crew, and more. Like us on Facebook, listen on Stitcher, add us to your Google Plus circles, follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on qradio.com, Bangalore, India, WRIR, Richmond, Virginia, KEUL, Hope and Girdwood, Alaska, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.